Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. New Coolong in a few moments on the NFL draft. First, our play-by-play call of the day. You're not going to see Bryce Harper break a bat and have that hold him back.
Here's the pitch, swung on, a broken bat, fly ball to deep right center field. Nimmo back of the warning track at the wall, and it is gone! Goodbye! He broke his bat, and he hit a home run! Unbelievable! Bang, zoom goes Bryce Harper.
Isn't that amazing? He broke his bat and homered. He broke his bat and homered. Wow.
Have you ever seen that while calling a baseball game?
No. I've seen broken bat doubles, things like that. Where I'm talking about the ball was actually well hit, but not a home run. Have not seen that. I've seen the suit get a strike, but the bumpers were up.
Just a bit outside.
Ding, 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 ding. Keep going back and forth, bumper to bumper. The Ohtani thing's amazing, isn't it? I mean, that's why I am going to watch tonight. The reason I'm going to watch is actually, I mean, look, I know what the Red Sox are playing. I got that part. And everyone knows. I don't talk about it that much, but it's because we don't live in Boston.
It's getting to the point where you just don't know when this is going to happen again.
Remember I told you about Brendan McKay?
Yeah.
For Tampa Bay. He was the fourth overall pick in the draft, and so he played at Hudson Valley. And they pitched him, and they hit him. Now, he did not pitch against State College. He only hit. And boy, did he hit. He was the National Player of the Year at Louisville. So just on that basis, I was interested to watch what kind of prospect he looked like, and he's fabulous hitting. He's a first baseman. He doesn't run well enough to play in the outfield, but he hits with power, can drive the ball, and his pitching stats were good. Well, they got to the Hudson Valley, won it this year in the New York Penn League, and he was the winning pitcher in one of the games. And from what I understand from the Rays people that were on the trip here, that they were not going to discourage him from trying to do both. In fact, there are some people think he may eventually transition to being just a pitcher. I said, well, can you keep doing it if he keeps hitting with the power? We'll see. No, they said, no, that's why they want to keep going along and seeing how far he can do it. Now, some guys convert. Rowan Wick was down to his last chance as a hitter here in State College. His problem was, and I talked to Rowan about this, is that he had trouble handling the curveball. He had a tendency to chase curveball. And you look at his career, he was down to it with the Cardinals. I mean, down to it. And they sent him here, and he hit 14 home runs in 3 weeks. And the thought had been they're going to keep him here. Really, the thought was to keep him here and just let him play the season out. Okay. And he was sent to Peoria. When he went to Peoria, he fell back into the old habits and didn't hit. So they converted him and made him into a pitcher. Now he's with the Padres organization now because he was eventually released by the St. Louis Cardinals. He got to the Cardinals briefly. Okay. At the end, Wick did get to the Cardinals. But then they decided right before camp to release him, put him on waivers, and the Padres claimed him. Well, now he's with San Antonio. Now, the guy has a great arm. You watch him throw in the outfield, great arm. And it translates. I mean, in the minors now, he's pitched in the minors for 3 years, and he's got a 2.79 ERA. Minor league baseball, that's not bad. Now, they spot him an inning here, an inning there. I mean, you're talking about 85 appearances and 93 and two-thirds innings pitched. Okay? But that's where he'll end up being. He'll end up being getting back to the majors as a pitcher. And right now he's in Double-A with the San Antonio Missions. All right. He probably will end up taking, once he gets to the majors, tons of money and doing what Sean does. Sean invests in condos all over the place. I mean, Sean only does the radio thing really as a side thing.
It's all about growing the portfolio.
Yeah, I mean, Neil Coulong, very much the same way. I know, Neil, I mean, you've taken all the money. You own condos all over the place. It must be awfully tough to pick which one to be in.
Yes, all those condos are why I'm sitting here staring out the window looking at snow right now on April 17th.
Yeah, it may not have been the best. I probably shouldn't have revealed that to everybody. Now you're going to have people calling you, just bothering you for money. I understand that.
Yes, it happens a lot. Thanks for outing me.
Yeah, I can imagine. Neil, this is the crazy season. It's the draft. Nobody knows what's going to happen. All right, so here we are, you know, a little more than a week away. What's your best guess?
Best guess. I think that the guy that's visiting today, Justin Reed, the safety out of Stanford, I think that's the most logical, all things considered. Team need, ability, value in the round, all of that put together, I think it would probably be him. But here's the tricky thing. You don't know who's going to be there. I would have said something probably kind of similar about T.J. Watt last year. But my thought was more like, well, it really kind of depends on who's going to be there. Wow. Everything that I've heard surrounding the team last year was David Njoku, the tight end from Miami, was going to be their guy at 30. But Cleveland traded back into the first round again to take him at 29. And then they took Watt after that. So it really is a situation where a team drafting 28 has to let the draft come to them. And that makes it probably got three or four different possible candidates, maybe – one of those three stands out a little bit more than the others, but the real trick of it is, in my mind, if he's that good, if he stands out above the other guys who were there, why is he on the board at 28? So right. To me, that really kind of throws everything out of whack. But I think overall that's probably the best bet, but I'm not sure it's going to be somebody that we can easily identify today.
Because, look, now this is only my opinion. You can tell me whether you agree with it or not. I think they ended up with Artie Burns because he was a fallback plan.
Yes, actually. That similar to Njoku and Watt last year, Burns was, I don't want to say fallback in that sense because, again, you don't know who's going to be there at 25, but the Bengals took William Jackson III at 24.
Yes.
And that, from what I've heard, he was their guy at 25. And you can see why now. Jackson's going to be a great player.
Yes.
I'm not totally sold on Burns yet, but Jackson's going to be really, really good. You can see where that comes from. I don't know if there was somebody in mind at 22 over Bud Dupree, but he's another guy that fell, and it just kind of fits into the mold of the types of players that you're going to get when you draft in the 20s and the 30s. You know, they're decent players. They're kind of prospects. They're going to need some time to grow, but it's really kind of hard to hit a home run on a player in that round, certainly right away. So for me, it really looks more like this is a 13-3 team that probably had a couple couple balls, you know, bounced in their favor last year to put them to 13-3. I don't think they were quite as good as their record indicated, but I also don't think a first round pick is really going to help them a whole lot this year. I don't think they're going to find a player that needs to get on the field right away or is even able to get on the field right away. I think somebody like Reed, I think he probably could if you want to do that, but he also signed Morgan Burnett for a reason. So with that, I think you might get a decent player, but this really isn't going to be an outstanding first round pick for the Steelers, I don't think.
That brings me to the next part. I'm going to go back maybe 15 years ago. I remember in the second round when the Steelers picked Antoine Randle-L, and I remember pretty close to what I said when it happened. And I said, that's a great purpose pick. The Steelers need somebody who can really return punts and be an extra receiver. And I felt at that point that's what they needed. And it turned out down the road he helped them win a Super Bowl. Are the Steelers at a point here in the second or third rounds where they can draft a piece that is critical to them winning, but to other franchises, they'd say, well, geez, why'd they draft him?
Yeah, I think that's a very good observation. I just can't believe it was 15 years ago that Randle-L was drafted. Wow, yeah. I was in college. I think, yes, the second round this year, barring a player like Juju Smith-Schuster falling, I think everybody would agree, if Juju Smith-Schuster had stayed in school, he would have easily been a first-round pick in this draft. Probably, he might even be the first receiver taken in this draft. If they don't get a solid fundamental piece like him falling into the second round, I think they can definitely keep it open to kind of a, I don't want to call it a gadget player, but somebody that fills a very specific but not real large role, whether that's a kick returner, whether that's kind of a scat back type of player, a super athlete. I think they might be willing to do that more in the second round this year than they have in the past. They've gotten good value in the second round over the last 5-6 years, so you don't want to necessarily mess with the formula a whole lot, but there are only so many spots on a team that has as much depth and balance as the Steelers do. I think if they can identify a safety or a linebacker in the first round, and there's somebody that's more of a, I don't know what the right word is, probably not novelty, but if there's a guy that fills a kind of a niche role, I think they would be willing to roll the dice on that in the second round, simply because they have enough firepower now to win games with their offense. Their defense is going to improve just considering the amount of investment they've already put into it. They can find a best player available, a specialty player that somebody might not have as a second-round pick on their board.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, sometimes people say, well, what'd they draft that person for? I mean, I'll give you an example. Sebastian Janikowski, remember when he got drafted? You're like, well, guess what? The dude kicked for how many years there? Was it a bad pick?
He's still kicking, too. Seattle just signed him for whatever reason.
Seattle just signed him, for goodness sakes. I mean, it wasn't a bad pick. If the guy's still playing for you 15 years later, it could not have been that horrible considering he filled a need for a decade and a half.
You definitely forget about the round that he went in if he played on your team for that long. You're right. He certainly had an excellent career, and I hope the Steelers aren't looking at a kicker in the first round. But,
no, I understand that. They don't need one.
The logic behind what Oakland did.
Right. No, I'm just saying. But those are the kind of niche picks that sometimes make a team or a franchise better, right? That because they're looking around saying, we're okay here and here and here. We really need one of these. So, and maybe the Steelers are in that spot where maybe they need one of these, because look, I don't care what anybody says, the Patriots did not get better in the offseason.
No, they certainly didn't. I think a team like Houston is probably more of what you have to look at now, but just looking at it from a divisional perspective, I'm not sure if any of the teams outside of Cleveland got better, and frankly, you would have had to try to make Cleveland at this point. They were only going to improve. It was impossible for them to not improve. I don't think they're a 9-win team this year, but Pittsburgh is probably the most balanced team in the division, and they will be again, but they didn't really get pushed all that much by their division rivals either. So I think with that said, they seem to be a win now mode, simply because if you're going to tag Le'Veon Bell for a second consecutive year and take on that level of cap hit, you obviously have a plan to win right now. I think they're just trying to maximize everything that they can in the final years of Ben Roethlisberger's career. And with that, I think, they can, if they can find a guy in the second or third round that might have fallen for one reason or another who could help them immediately, I think they'll take that. Then the second and third round is definitely a lot different than the first. In the first, they really want that blue chip, steady kind of guy. They want a guy that can start pretty quickly into his career and play his best football by years three and four, especially at the position that they've been drafting at recently. I think a guy like T.J. Watt fits with that description. He's going to get better the more he plays. He's not necessarily ready right now, but they're willing to invest that fifth-year option into him. The second-round guys seem to be more of the star guys that they found. It's Stephon Tuitt, Le'Veon Bell, of course, Juju Smith-Schuster. These are guys that are making impacts on the team that have, perhaps less value as a position, or perhaps they had an injury concern like Tuitt did. Those types of things are typically what they do, what has fallen to them in the second round. But if there is, that high-level, high-risk type of prospect out there who could help them right away, I think they'll look at that in the second or third round.
All right, let's have fun at the top of the draft. All right, let's just take the first five picks. All right, so, right now it's Cleveland picking first. Neil Coulong, general manager, takes?
I'm going to go with Darnold, simply because overall with my franchise, with the amount of upheaval that it's just gone through, you need the lower risk prospect. You need the face of the franchise. I think Darnold probably has the best combination of all of that, even if he's not the best at any one thing in comparison to the rest of the quarterback. I think he has the most potential to be a solid quarterback. I'm not sure there is a great quarterback in this draft.
That's right.
I think
agree.
He has the best chance of being a solid one.
My pick in that spot also would be Sam Darnold, because I look at an offensive line where I need a quarterback that at least has some creativity when he moves. And I think, to me, that fits. So the Giants pick two, and your selection is?
Oh, if I'm the Giants and I have to make that pick, for where I am as a franchise right now, I think it has to be Chubb. Although I would absolutely hate passing on Saquon Barkley. I think we're all in agreement there that he's a special player. But I think the makeup of their team, what they're trying to do, as they rebuild their franchise, they have a solid overall team. I think things just went absolutely crazy last year. It's not the year for them to bring in a new quarterback and to create the distraction that's going to bring, basically ushering in the end of a two-time Hall of Fame or two-time Super Bowl champion quarterback. I don't think it's quarterback for them. I can't probably, for where I am with the Giants, I probably can't pass on Chubb either, especially after getting rid of Pierre Paul this offseason. Mm-hmm. I think you need to go with the defensive end, too.
Well, your logic makes sense. I am picking Saquon Barkley because I don't think Manning has had a really good running back behind him since Tiki Barber. And I think in combination with Odell Beckham Jr., I think it would, and getting Nate Solder, that's what sells me on Barkley. All right, so now we go to three. I think we both agree the Jets are taking a quarterback. So which one do who wants to go? You go first or me go first?
You can go this time.
Okay, Josh Rosen.
I think Rosen's he's a smart pick there. That was probably going to be mine as well. But isn't there something about Baker Mayfield that just screams New York?
There's a lot about Baker Mayfield I really like. I think he can be a success in the league. I just think they're going to take Josh Rosen. I really
do. That probably wouldn't surprise me either. If there's the media ground for a guy like that, the platform is certainly there for him, and he's very talented. He's very impressive. There are parts of his game that I'm not necessarily sold on. I'm not sure overall how high his ceiling really is. And there's an issue of, this is a franchise quarterback. I forget who it was, and this perhaps isn't a fair statement to make as an anonymous source, but somebody told Doug Farrer of Sports Illustrated something to the effect, I'm paraphrasing him, but something to the effect of, the last thing we need is him tweeting about the president when we're on a losing streak.
Yeah.
Things like that, you have to kind of think about it. If you're drafted third overall, you haven't had a franchise quarterback in forever if you're the Jets. Do you really want to bet on somebody that is at the very least going to present himself as being more than just a football player? I know how bad that sounds, but it's a business decision. It's nothing against him as a person. It's nothing against him from a character perspective. I think he's a great guy. He's smart. But do you want to hook your plow to that, knowing that he's going to be that type of person?
Which then gets us to four, and it's Cleveland once again. All right. Now, you've already gone Bradley Chubb to the Giants. This is where I'll put Bradley Chubb. I'll send him to the Browns. This is if everything stands as is. I'll send Bradley Chubb to the Browns. Is this where you send Barkley?
This is where I'm sending Barkley. I'm saying all of this. My prediction, I think two of the first five picks are going to get traded in this draft.
I agree with you. I agree. We're in agreement.
That said, if everything does stand firm where it is, I think Barkley, for me at this point, is clearly the best player on the board. And he's a guy I think they can, they can find a role for him. Not to mention the fact there's the biggest FU to Pittsburgh. It's Todd Haley getting Saquon Barkley on the Browns. I mean, really, right. Barkley could very easily be the next Le'Veon Bell. I think he has that level of potential, and Haley certainly knows how to use that.
Yeah, he does, which is five is what? That's Denver, right? Okay.
Denver, yeah.
Okay. I know they signed Case Keenum. I'm picking Baker Mayfield.
Yep, Mayfield would probably be Rosen or Mayfield, whichever one doesn't go to the Jets.
That's right.
I think he's going to end up in this particular scenario. I think they're happy with either one of them at five. I think it's a solid group of quarterbacks at the top from a developmental standpoint. I don't think any of these guys really should start in year one. I don't think any of them will. But it's going to be better for all of them. And I think Denver has they've got some work they need to do offensively. They're getting a bit old. They need to upgrade, certainly at the quarterback position. Case Keenum is not a long-term guy for him by any stretch. I don't think even Case Keenum thinks that. But he can be a bridge to them over and help a defense that's still pretty strong compete this season while their rookie continues to learn and grow as a player.
Well, now that we've solved the first five picks, is there any need to watch next Thursday night? I mean, really, we've solved it already. There's no need to watch.
I think this will be the most exciting, top 10 picks in a draft that we've seen, simply because there's going to be so much motion, a lot of churn. There's going to be a lot of teams moving up, moving down.
I agree.
Whatever the order is now, it's going to be completely different come next Thursday night.
I agree with that. I think this is it's going to turn into its own game show as we watch it. All right? It's going to be a lot of drama. All right, Neil, a pleasure. That was a lot of fun. Appreciate the time as always, my friend.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulong, USA Today. Final half hour coming up in a few moments. We'll talk about whether baseball should shorten its season. It has a supporter among one of the players. On News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Get outside and clean up the yard.
Yes, dear.
Springtime means cleanup time, even at Sunbury Motors Ford. Sunbury Motors' spring inventory cleanup has begun. Once a year, SMC takes their entire new Ford inventory and prices them at levels not seen before. SMC is where you want to be to choose from 37 2018 Ford Escapes.
That's just it.
Ford Motor Company and Sunbury Motors have increased the discounts on 2018 Ford Escapes. They're slashed to the lowest price ever offered to the general public. Now, at an amazing $18,988. SMC is where you want to be for 2018 Ford F-150s, starting at just $26,669. SMC is where you want to be if you want a brand new 2018 Ford Focus for just $14,905. SMC is where you want to be for a 2018 Edge, starting at $26,790. And 2018 Ford Explorers are ready to roll in at an unheard of $29,915. Hurry into Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza. SMC, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, great to have you with us on the show today. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. A couple areas I want to get into. We'll start with baseball. Look, the weather is, from year to year, week to week, month to month, we don't know. I remember last year in the month of February, there were four times in February 2017 where I went out and I played golf. Got my golf membership in January, and it turned out I could play four times in February last year because the weather was nice enough. Well, I haven't been out four times. I've been out three times this year total, and two of them, one was 36 degrees when I went out, and the other one was, I think, 39, 40 degrees when I went out. And that's the way it is. I mean, today is another one of those days where it feels like it's late February, early March.
Yeah, spitting some flurries when I was on my way to work this morning, and I was grabbing some lunch down on the strip in Shamokin Dam this afternoon, and the gal was taking care of me at my booth. There were two other guys a couple of booths down from me, and they were joking. She says, "When is it going to get sunny again?" And they're like, "No, not going to happen. Nope, sun's canceled."
Yeah.
Like, joking about it. It's like, and she said it was funny over the weekend on Saturday. It was a beautiful day on Saturday, but too hot to start the gardening outside.
Well, it's funny. I heard a commercial earlier today for Home Depot, I think it was, and it said, "Yeah, pick up your plants." Sounds like, hey, I could pick them up. They all die, but yeah, I'll pick them up. Sure. Anthony Rizzo of the Cubs, which now brings me to baseball, is advocating for a shorter season, if that, even that means smaller paychecks for players. "I think we play too much baseball," Rizzo said Tuesday during his weekly appearance on ESPN 1000 in Chicago. Yes, guys are going to take pay cuts, but are we playing this game for the money, or do we love the game? I know it's both, but in the long run, it'll make everything better. Rizzo believes a transition period with guaranteed contracts could be worked out, perhaps grandfathering them into a new system with new contracts reflecting fewer games played. So once you start taking money from the guys, that's where it's going to be a little more dicey, which is, that's obvious. That's obvious with anything. But here's the issue. The weather, I mentioned now, the weather in February last year was nice enough to, for me to play golf four times. In March last year, it wasn't that great. It's so unpredictable. And as you know, I've talked repeatedly that, look, seasons are too long. Now, football has a right. Remember when football was talking about 18 games? Originally, I was like, yeah, lop off two preseason. I was all for, like, hey, let's go to 18 games. Well, then I started thinking about the injuries. I started thinking about the quarterbacks. You look at some of the quarterback matchups we get in the last third of the season. Oh, brutal. Well, the NFL can't go to 18 games. They can't. The game is too, it's too physical, and these guys get beat up. So 16 is just right for them. In my opinion, basketball, the NBA, should be playing 70 and not 82, but the owners can't give up six home dates apiece. Hockey, that should be 70 games and not 82, but some owners do not make money in the NHL until their team in the playoffs gets to the third round. Oh, by the way, that's called the conference final. I know it's hard to believe sometimes when you hear some of this stuff, but it's true. But I'm saying idealistically, baseball to me idealistically should be 144 games, not 162. But same story again. The owners of Major League Baseball are not going to give up nine home dates apiece to make this happen. You're saying, wait, that's 18 games. Well, that's nine home, nine away. So that's where you get the nine. They're not going to give up nine home dates, playing 81 home dates versus 72. But they need to do something. They need to start the season, even though it wouldn't solve anything this year, but they need to start the season 9-10 days later, and they need to end the season 9-10 days earlier.
Will there come a day in Major League Baseball where there will be a salary cap? And if that happens, then will trimming the baseball schedule down, will some of the owners then warm up to it?
I think some would like to see a salary cap, but they're not going to get a concession from the Major League Baseball Players Association on that. They've never conceded that point. The fact that they have a luxury tax right now is, I think, as far as I think the players will allow them to go. But you have games being played now in cold weather, okay, freezing temperatures, and the quality of baseball, not that great. For the fan, having to endure it, not great. I give the fans credit that want to be out there, that love the game so much. I mean, and you know, you were talking about a guy who I love all sports. College basketball, college football, the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, Major League Baseball, Minor League Baseball, golf. And I enjoy everything. As you can tell, I pretty much can easily go from one topic to another on this show because I've always been interested in all these topics. But there's also has to be some realism in it. There's so much crossover in seasons now that right now you have the Stanley Cup playoffs going on. You have the NBA playoffs underway. You've got Major League Baseball being played right now. You've got the NFL draft next week. You've got college football ending, or college football ending spring drills this weekend. And when Penn State played its NIT championship game against Utah, that was the opening day of the baseball season. I mean, there were baseball scores on our scoreboard when we did that. But what I'm talking about is all ideology. The owners are not going to cut back on home dates unless they get concessions from the players on salaries, because it's not easy, especially in some markets, to make the money to cover this. As I mentioned, in the hockey, for example, which has, I mean, NBC has been a really good TV partner for them, and they are giving them record numbers. But the TV contract for the NHL, even though it may be record numbers and great exposure, isn't even in the same realm as the NFL, the NBA, or Major League Baseball. They're not even in the same realm. So they really do rely heavily on attendance. Attendance is really important for them. Well, they can't generate the money attendance-wise until, for some of them, not all, but for some, until they get to the third round of the playoffs, which is the conference final. So I understand there's, you know, you have to be realistic about this, but idealistically, they need to, I mean, the Major League Baseball season, idealistically, should start 9-10 days later. Even, let's say 11 days later, 9 games, 11 days, should start later. So this year it started on March 28th. Okay. Well, it probably should have started on April 8th or 9th, like Monday the 9th, for example, of April. Now, you still would have had cold games. You still would have had 6 games this weekend wiped out because of snow. But you can maybe construct the schedule a little bit differently, too, that instead of the Yankees playing Detroit in a doubleheader, maybe the Yankees instead are playing at Houston and Detroit's playing at Texas to start the season. It's not going to be a perfect solution, but they've got to come up with something that's a little more realistic. And then you end the season earlier. Instead of ending the season on September 30th, you end the season on September 20th, and you get the first playoff going that weekend, and you try and get the World Series wrapped up legitimately by mid-October, because you know what? I mean, last year, for example, Penn State played Ohio State at 3:30 in the afternoon as a lead-in for Fox into the World Series, which is fine. That's fine. That worked out fine for both and for everybody. And for Fox, it was a ratings bonanza. But at that point, a lot of people are engaged in the football season. It's late October. It's the last weekend of October. You've got people engaged in the football season. You get the baseball season over by October 15th or 16th. There's also better odds, not perfect, because, again, the weather's unpredictable. Yeah, at least the weather's going to be semi-decent as opposed to, the last World Series game I went to, it was 47 and misting out in late October in Boston. And it didn't get warmer as the night went. Now, the Red Sox won, so it kind of like
took the chill away.
So, big time. I remember walking back to the car, though, because I parked at the Prudential Center. And so that's where I usually park, is over at the Prudential Center. And, you know, it's 4 or 5 blocks away. And I remember walking back, and about halfway back, I'm like, man, I looked at Patrick. I said, Patrick, man, it is cold out.
Speaking of Boston, about how they endured the marathon yesterday with the conditions up there.
Oh, man. Brutal. You notice the times, the winning time is like 2:15. And the winning overall time, and the winning time for the women was 2:36. Those are like 8-10 minutes longer than usual, or off the record. By the way, great story out of that. Listen to this. Okay. Mary Schertenlieb. Okay. Started the Boston Marathon yesterday, crossed the finish line at 12:18 this morning, 13 hours after she started. She is a leukemia survivor. She was at mile 15 on Monday when she went to a medical tent shivering, purple lips, and thinking she had hypothermia. She called her husband, Rich. He suggested she come home, take a hot shower, put on some dry clothes, and then restart the run. A couple later went back to the spot that she stopped, and they finished together holding hands. She ended up raising, with her run, $33,000 for cancer research. How about that? Rich, by the way, her husband is the co-host of the Tucher and Rich show on Boston Sports Talk Radio, station WBZ-FM 98.5, the Sports Hub. One of the guests on 98.5, the Sports Hub, on Sunday was some announcer from Penn State talking about the NFL draft. All right. Mike Mayock's story. Next, as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. To me, one of the top analysts out there, and this has nothing to do at all with Todd McShay or Mel Kiper, zero to do with them. When I watch the NFL draft, and again, zero to do with Mel, zero to do with Todd McShay, so this is not about them. But everyone has their own preferences. I really like listening to Mike Mayock when I watch the draft. And when I've heard Mike Mayock do games, and it's been a while since he has, I really enjoy it because, to me, there is a standard for an analyst. And I work with the two best on the planet, in Jack Ham and Dick Girardi. To me, the best analysts are that when the game is over, okay, my question is, did I learn more about the game? Now, obviously, with Jack, I'm spoiled. Every game's like that. With Dick Girardi, I'm spoiled. Every game's like that. I always feel like I know a little bit more about the game after working with them. And I can imagine you, the listener, sits back and goes, whoa, okay? You know, because the two of them really deliver the goods. Well, Mike Mayock's one of those guys for me. And he was on Sports Radio 610 in Houston and said this: I'm highly frustrated and agitated. He said, when you don't have a big name, I played 2 years and it wasn't any good. I couldn't stay healthy. If you don't have a Hall of Fame jacket, it's hard to get a high-level job calling games in our industry. And it bothers me that network executives think that the only, let's put it this way, Fox has Thursday Night Football, and they feel like the only person who can do that game. And if they can't, and if he can't, then Troy Aikman's got to do 2 games a week. I don't understand that thought process. I mean, Troy Aikman is great, but there's a stable of other guys who can do it really well. And he's right about that. And there's no question about that. He says, again, this is my own personal frustration. I'm highly frustrated and agitated that I cannot find a television gig in the fall to do games because that is my favorite thing I do. I love the draft, but to me, there is nothing better than walking on the grass and talking to coaches and players and being a part of that for 3 hours where you sit there and we're talking about it. He says, there's nowhere to hide. I love that 3 hours, and I miss it. And Mayock expanded more in this setting and said, I really get frustrated when I see all the television executives hiring big names that have not put in the time and effort in learning how to do it properly. I think Tony Romo is an anomaly. I enjoyed him last year. I thought he brought a different color and candor to what's going on, but I feel like we're going through 10 or 20 former players and coaches before we find one guy that sticks. But, I can't begin to tell you how right I think he is about that, because I think he is spot on. And believe me, I know that, look, he's frustrated about his situation, and he should be. He should be. Mike Mayock does not talk down to the audience. He informs the audience. He educates. He anticipates a little bit, plays along a little bit, play along with the manager. We've got, or in this case, the head coach. And he does that because he's smart. It's 2018. We need smart commentary out there. He's right. Troy Aikman does a great job. Tony Romo, I thought, was a breath of fresh air. Dan Fouts and Ian Eagle are a really good combination. There's no getting around it. But boy, as you start going down the ladder of this thing, and again, now you gotta remember what part of my frustration is as I watch some of these televised games. Working with Jack Ham spoils you, right? Cerebral, sees things. Dick Girardi, same thing. Because college basketball, it's one thing that comes out in the tournament is the lack of depth in the analytical roles. And also it comes out in the bowl games, too, the lack of depth that they have. And I admittedly get very spoiled by the cerebral approach of Jack Ham. Now, obviously, we're tight. And same thing with Dick Girardi. We're obviously very tight. But then after going through that for 3, 4, 5, 6 hours every week, and then I'll turn on Sunday, and I'll be like, oh, I feel like I'm getting nothing. Now, with the top guy, Romo, yes. I give him a lot of credit. Boy, he was good last year. Dan Fouts, yes. Collinsworth. I got to mention, I'm a big Collinsworth guy. I like Chris Collinsworth a lot. And Troy Aikman. Okay. I feel like I'm getting the full meal. Instead of being told the obvious, see the obvious, whatever. Then I see a guy like this, and I've complained to you before about Mike Mayock not doing games. When he did Thursday Night Football with Brad Nessler, man, I really enjoyed that.
And prior to that, he was doing some Notre Dame games for NBC for a while.
Yeah, but not having him out there, I know he's the one complaining and it's his life. I got that. But I'm 100% behind him. He's absolutely right. Sports fans are smart. Is smart. Look at the people that we have listening to this show, calling into this show, making comments. How smart are they? Really smart. You don't talk down to them because they're smart. All right? Well, Mike Mayock is smart. I want to hear smart. Just me. I admit I'm spoiled. I work with two of the best.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.